Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour for February 16, 2023. Tonight, going to be talking about some spokes at Saturn, if you can imagine that. What's a spoke at Saturn? Well, I actually predicted these in a paper that was published in a peer-reviewed journal in 1980 when I was a faculty member at Cornell University. And I was doing my work, and I literally saw this coming. And there was an article just put out by NASA stating that they have no idea what's going on, and they're able to see these with the Hubble Space Telescope. But a spoke is basically a darkening in the region of Saturn's rings, and I'll be talking about what causes that. Also, I'll be talking a little bit about what I would call the failure of the United States, let's just call it that, because when the Europeans came to the great North American continent, they were escaping religious persecution. There were literally battles going on where the Catholics and the Protestants were trying to kill each other. It was kind of a disaster. But when they got to this new land, there was a lot of territory for everybody, and they kind of spread out. And they had to really buckle down, let's just put it that way. Because if you didn't work hard, you didn't eat, and if you didn't eat, you died. Just as simple as that. And so over time, and especially after World War II, I would qualify that, and in a sense, before World War II also, people just got fat and lazy. And there was a time during World War II when there was a national effort, whether you agree with it or not, or all the different historical disinformation about World War II and the things that really happened, the things that really caused the war, etc. Okay, all of that aside, what happened is, in fact, the country geared up, and you had women working in factories. You had the men overseas on the front lines or doing their job in a cohesive manner, and everybody was doing their part in the war effort. And my own parents got, of course, wrapped up in that. My dad was in England. I'm not going to go into personal details, but everybody really had to sacrifice, let's just put it that way, physically, mentally, spiritually, in all different respects. They had to really put in a lot of time and effort. Okay, so that's one thing. And then after World War II, of course, all the men came back from the war, and the ones that survived, of course, and got married and had kids, and that was the baby boom. And so what's happened ever since, in spite of the fact that there was the Vietnam War and the Korean War and the other Mideastern wars and everything else going on, the Southeast Asian wars that were going on, Cambodia and Vietnam and Laos and all of that, the CIA wars in Southeast Asia, slowly, the American population got fat and lazy. And you find that, say the renegade generation, of which I was actually part of, and of course, when everybody else was running around having sit-ins and things like that, I was busy with my nose in a physics book and mathematics books and things like that. And then I went to Mexico, taught, and had my first, what you might call my first real job. But I didn't take part in a lot of that. I was off on my own venture, let's put it that way, and have been ever since. But what happened is slowly and this is a way the communists move in, and it's a very slow process, where people become lazy. And so the people that were challenging the government in the 50s in the 1960s, during the Vietnam War era and everything at that time, eventually switched, and a lot of them became very pro-government. Anything the government says is true. And you find a lot of the singers, like, you know, if you go to Hollywood, a lot of the protest singers became big Hollywood celebrities and now are just extremely woke. And so at any rate, it's the point is that over those decades, people changed, and so did a lot of the just general population. But let me just list off here the seven capital sins. In what I've done, did a little bit of traveling recently, and you know, and I've traveled before, but this time it really struck me that the American population has really gotten like overweight. Let's just put it that way. A lot of really overweight people who really just don't have a clue of anything that's going on. So let me just list these, and they're all, in a sense, related. These are the seven capital sins that they talk about in the Bible. Pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath, and sloth. And so sloth is the just laziness. Sitting around, not doing anything, not being productive. Wrath is where there's anger that is unsubstantiated. Gluttony is not only gluttony of food, of course that's the main one that we usually think of when you think of gluttony, but just gluttony in general, and taking too much, taking more than what you need in excess. Envy is where you are looking for something that belongs to somebody else. You're envious of something that somebody else has. Lust, of course, a lot of times deals with a lust for another person in a sexual sense, but it really extends much farther than that. Lust has really a broad meaning. Greed, meaning that you want everything for yourself. You're all very self-centered. And then pride, wow, is where, for example, collectively, the people in the United States think that the United States is the best place in the world. And, you know, there's good pride, and then there's this seven capital sin type of pride. Having pride for things you've accomplished, That's a positive thing, because that motivates you, that puts you in a positive direction. But pride is a false pride. The seven capital sin type of pride was a false pride, where you put a lot more credit, let's put it that way, on yourself than what you actually deserve. And of course, when you talk to people in foreign countries, they talk about the ugly American. The ugly American is the epitome of the seven capital sins as viewed by people in a foreign country, that Americans just think they're just better than everybody else. And it's, you know, it's a very anti-humanistic viewpoint to think that because you have nicer clothes and you have more money and that you have eaten better in your life, etc., that you're somehow better. But the reason I'm talking about this is because what I see is that the American population has succumbed to the seven capital sins in a big way. And so whether you look at the news media, the mainstream news media, which is basically lies about reality, and to cover for people who are making a lot of money, or basically people who are in power. That's a form of lust and greed and pride and gluttony and wrath and sloth, all wrapped into one, where the people who are in charge, they don't care about the damage being done to people when millions of people come across the southern border. And it's not just the damage that's done to the United States, but the damage that's done to these people who think that they're going to come to the United States, a lot of them dying on the way, a lot of them being wrapped up into human trafficking, and just you don't hear about this in the news, of course, but the idea that the only reason this is being allowed is so the people in power can stay in power. That's a way for them, their vision is a way for them to keep their power hold, the power that they have over everybody else. But the end result, though, is to fool the people into a false sense of pride, a false sense of accomplishment. And anyway, you see this a lot on college campuses where people go, oh, the United States is the best country that's ever existed in the world. Well, we don't have a history of all the countries that have existed in the world. They are, we literally do not have a lot of history because most of the cultures that have existed in the history of the world have been decimated, and we really have very little information about them at all. But the point I wanted to make is that if you look at Europe, England, Australia, and the United States, of course, New Zealand, what you would call the white European nations, and the way they have basically capitalized on the rest of the world, but also the other groups that then want what they have. Everybody wants to be like the United States. Everybody wants to go to the United States from third world countries. That's the epitome of your goal, your metas, your targets that you want to meet in your life is to get to the United States, and somehow that'll make things better. But people don't understand what the United States is, and the kids in the United States don't know today. So it's a way of destroying the country, is just to bring all of these people in that have no idea what the United States is. All it is to them is a paycheck where they can improve their lives. Well, that's great. But they don't understand. Now, the immigration process to go through legal immigration has a lot of information that people have to learn about the United States. They have to learn what it's all about. They have to learn about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and who the presidents were and what the presidents, you know, why was the United States founded and what were the founding principles, etc. They have to learn all of that. When you bring in millions and tens of millions of people that don't have any clue, they just want to sell drugs on the street, or maybe they want to get a job, or they, you know, bring their family here, but they have no clue what the United States is all about. So it waters down the United States, and it keeps the people in power, and that's what it is all about. Okay, so going back a little bit of a summary here, the United States primarily was through the 1800s, you know, after the founding fathers, etc., it was mainly European. And then, of course, the slave trade brought about the black population. And there's an interesting question that I don't think anybody's ever asked. And this is very typical of history, where events that were not very favorable to the people at the time, including, say, my ancestors, the Irish. When the Irish came to the United States, they were treated horribly. They were not allowed to have employment. They worked. My ancestors, when they came to the U.S., were on the East Coast in big cities, and they knew how to manage horses. So they were in stables and things like that, and that's the kind of employment they could get. And so eventually when the West opened up, they went out and were allowed to get land. They remember the land opened up, and they would go out and make a claim, literally just go there and say, okay, this is your property, start working it. And that's how my ancestors came about, but a lot of them died on the boats coming over. A lot of them never even made it to the boats because of the Irish famine. potato famine, etc. And I am a result of that, of people suffering, of people having very difficult times, and coming to the United States because of mass starvation. And so one might ask the question, where would the blacks be in the United States today if it were not for slavery? They would still, most of them probably would have never been born, because the mortality rate in Africa is extremely high. In other words, 50% of the people would die before age probably 5 in Africa. So most of the people in existence today would not be here at all, let alone in the United States, which is a much better place for them than in Africa. So the horrendous conditions and slavery and things that existed were not beneficial. Where you cannot, and by any stretch of the imagination, be conceived as some kind of a beneficial event or time for these people. But because of that, the blacks today are now in a land of opportunity where they would not be otherwise. I don't think anybody's ever quite looked at it that way. Or you might say wars, or you might say, with World War II, all of the men came back from the war, got married, had babies, and that's where I came from. And maybe I wouldn't exist if it were not for World War II. You know, so is that justification for World War II? No. But that's history. The history changes things on a lot of times on a large scale, and that influences the future. Sometimes for a better outcome. And so my existence, I feel, is a good outcome. And maybe I wouldn't be here if it weren't for World War II. Who knows? I don't know. We don't know. But one thing is very clear, that also the situation going on right now with people coming in across the border, their future generations may be good workers. Or here's the thing with a lot of the Latin people that are coming into the country right now. They're very influenced by shiny things and say the lifestyle that they might get as new members of the United States, but they're very influenced by music, like I say, flashy things, and they really don't have any understanding of the country that they're moving into. They don't understand it. They don't understand where it came from, or why things are the way they are, or what the Constitution means, and they simply will not learn. A lot of them speak their own language. They don't become assimilated into the American culture. So are they going to be good citizens? Or are they going to stay in their own corner and not be assimilated? You know, if they're there just looking for a better paycheck, then that's not a good reason for anybody to be here. Be that as it may. So the whole point here is that to maintain the United States as a great country, and I started this out by talking about the white population basically falling into complacency, and then also the other populations that followed that also falling into complacency, and I was talking about the 7 deadly sins. And so when you look at the people, if you go out in public, you know, in foreign countries and watch Americans, or if you're in the United States and watch Americans, they're really pretty out of it. Obesity is a big issue in the United States, where people are just extremely overweight, not just a little bit, but extremely overweight. Makes me feel like a skinny little person when I'm out in public. Sometimes I go, my goodness. And these are people that are not, they're not cognizant of what's going on. the vast majority of people. And so anyway, the whole point here is what is happening to the United States, which they say is, and this is another, say, news talking point, they claim the United States is the most powerful country in the world, etc. It's not. It's not by any stretch of the imagination. In other third world countries, let me just talk about this for a minute, that the population of the United States, the current generation, which that's pretty weird nomenclature, but they're calling it the Z generation, it will be the last American generation because it's extremely small. And the oddities that are coming out of this, where people are not going to have families, they're not going to have kids, they walk around with their nose in a telephone, completely influenced by little short videos on TikTok, you know, with strange beliefs about who they are and what they are, and simply are not going to reproduce. So there's the end of the American generations simply happening right now. There's not enough to, every generation has to support the generations prior to that, and that has happened traditionally, but this new generation of today will not support anything. So literally you have people that are my age, you know, people up in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s, who are still operating businesses, still working as engineers and leaders and heads of companies, etc., because the next generation simply can't manage it. It would fall apart in a New York second. So anyway, that does not bode well for the country. Interestingly enough, in China, they had a time when they were worried about overpopulation, and so they literally allowed women to only have one baby, and it could not be a girl. They were literally killing little girls' babies so that they wouldn't have more population. So they allowed all these men to be born. Now you have a massive male population in China that have no wives, and their population is screeching to a halt. And so their next generation is going to be very minimal and certainly not going to be able to support the retirement of people who are currently in the Chinese working force. So the fear of overpopulation has caused extreme underpopulation in the next generation, because will be those generations that generate the next wave of population. And across the board around the world, underpopulation is happening right now. So if you hear somebody in a classroom talking about overpopulation, they simply don't know what they're talking about. They're just blowing smoke or smoking something. And it's an old adage. It has no foundation in reality at all. Okay, just a quick comment about this derailment of a train, and then also the so-called balloons from China, and all of the different stories. There is so much misinformation coming out about these things that I'm not going to try and interpret what happened, other than they did happen. Were they planned? Were these clearly the cars, the wheels were on fire, they say, for 40 minutes before they went up in smoke. And for some reason, like the cameras that simply were not working, two different cameras, and then the guards sleeping at the Jeffrey Epstein alleged murder in the jail cell, where nobody seemed to be cognizant of what happened to him. You know, these things take on a life of their own, a story of their own, and you know, in the midst of it, there's a lot of misinformation. But these are also like horrific events, but nobody really knows where they came from, who did them. There's all kinds of speculation now that the weather balloons were UFOs. I mean, it just gets wacky. Just gets wacky as can be. So I'm not going to say anything other than there's a lot of misinformation out there, and it's a smokescreen. These are all big smokescreens. But just jumping back to the topic at hand here, the first topic about the what's really going to happen to the United States and the degradation of the population of the United States. Remember that the American Revolution only had about 5% of the people who were involved in the revolution, and the other 95% did not partake in it. So sometimes it takes a very small percentage of the people to just say, for example, no more wokeism, the insanity of people that are just goofy, trying to redefine, you know, people that literally have mental problems trying to define society, and actually a very low portion of the population, but then other people accepting it. And that's the bizarre part, is that things that make no sense, people saying that the blue sky is green and everybody's supposed to accept it. The question is there enough of a ability of the very few people who have a grasp on reality to save the United States? And, you know, if history is any indicator, if you look at old Rome, if you look at other major societies that have gone under, all the different empires, you know, Persia, oh, just on and on, that grew up and became powerful and then got fat and lazy, that's the way they all go. That once they, you know, once they get big and powerful, then the next generation gets fat and lazy and blows it all. You can see this also in fortunes, like the, just pick any of the fortunes where somebody amassed a huge fortune, and typically one person that did it, and then all of a sudden all the offspring come along and have no idea how to manage the money and blow it all in a single generation on fabulous opulence and purchasing and boats and, you know, parties and everything else, and literally blow a massive fortune to the point where their offspring have nothing. So anyway, how many times have you seen that? And that's the same course for countries, entire populations and civilizations, and many times natural disasters end them prematurely also. So anyway, what does the future hold for the U.S.? Probably not good. Because the you know, the voting systems, anyway, I could go on and on, but if history is an indicator, the United States is very short-lived for this world. Okay, just a quick mention of a thing 10 years ago. Remember the asteroid? There was supposedly an asteroid that came in and hit Russia, and this was a man-made event. I called it out at the time. So they're bringing this back in the news media now, and when they bring these things back, which was in a sense a minor event, it hit this one Russian town and blew out some windows. I don't think anybody died, and they had, you know, dash cams showing this come into the atmosphere, and it was a man-made fake asteroid strike designed to basically warn Russia, and also to use it as fake news, talking about asteroids coming in and damaging Earth. So anyway, and of course, that's always possible every day. In fact, just recently there was an announcement about an asteroid that came near Earth and zipped by and missed us. And those things happen all the time. There are basically web pages you can go where they talk about all of the near-Earth asteroids and how close they come to Earth. There's at least a dozen every day. And, of course, some of them could hit Earth and cause some damage. But the damage from asteroids has been highly, highly, highly over-exaggerated, and it's due to bad science coming out of NASA. The reality is that asteroids, when they hit Earth, the energy pretty much is absorbed locally. And you would not want to be hit by one, but like I say, the idea that one would hit Earth and then scorch the entire Earth is just computer fantasy of NASA. The reality is even the relatively large ones, the energy is absorbed locally. If it hit in the ocean someplace, then it would cause a tsunami, and that would not be good either. So, but I'm personally working on a project right now, and of course NASA is working on a project. They want to hit an asteroid with a spacecraft and move it out of its orbit, and it's a really bad idea, because they don't have the wherewithal to calculate orbits in far into the future. And so there's just, when you crash something into an asteroid, that something is very small compared to the size of the asteroid. So you would have to do this crashing many, many years in advance to actually affect the asteroid to move out of its orbit enough to miss Earth. But then again, they don't have the accuracy, nor the computer power, nor the knowledge of how to predict the actual path of asteroids down to the point of hitting Earth. Earth is relatively small in outer space. It's moving relatively quickly. And for them to predict years in advance an asteroid hitting Earth is simply not possible, let alone how much to hit it to knock it out of its orbit so that it would miss Earth if it was potentially an Earth-threatening asteroid. So anyway, that program is not going to work. It's not going to work at all. And then they want one where they would blow the asteroid into a million pieces, and now you have a shotgun effect, so you're guaranteed that some big pieces are going to hit Earth. Really stupid. And so what I've developed is a method for doing away with asteroids, and I'll be presenting that in the near future. And so it's actually a system that does work. So things like my wing generator, which does work, all these things are very, once you see them, they're very obvious. But the idea that somehow hitting an asteroid with a spacecraft is going to do something is absolutely absurd. Or the Bruce Willis movie where they go up and blow up an asteroid and save Earth. That's Hollywood. That's Hollywood. Okay. So I wanted to mention that Russian asteroid supposedly hitting Earth, and bogus story on a bogus event, man-made event. My main science topic I wanted to talk about this week is Saturn spokes. Now, when I was a faculty member at Cornell University in 1979, 80, 81 time frame, that's when the Voyager, the Pioneer spacecraft, were going by Jupiter and Saturn. And so at any rate, I wrote a paper. It's called Saturn Sweeper Moons Predicted. You can go see it. It was published in an astrophysics journal called, at the time, it was called The Moon and the Planets. I think now it's just called The Planets. They changed the name of that journal. But my article is called Saturn Sweeper Moons Predicted. And I talk about the darkening of the rings of Saturn, which are the spokes, which were discovered by the Voyager spacecraft. They were actually seen, and I predicted them, and also the moons that were in the gaps of the rings. I said the gaps in the rings are caused by sweeper moons, and I said that it was due to electrical effects. And now here we are in the year 2023, and NASA comes out with an article saying they just still don't understand what causes these spokes. And then this lady, the NASA lady, scientist, whatever, comes out and says, well, maybe it's electrical. Oh, gee. Anyway, and that's, by the way, the paper that was stolen by Joe Burns, the editor of Icarus. He was the sitting editor in place of Carl Sagan, because Carl Sagan of Cornell University was off in Hollywood making the Cosmos series, which, by the way, I have a lot of commentary on that in my education package. I have a 20 lecture series, I think it was 20, maybe 22 lectures, hour-long lectures in my education series, criticizing, pulling apart Carl Sagan's Cosmos series book and TV series. The book is just a replication of the TV series, where Carl Sagan sets down standard science for all time. There's no greater compendium of false information than Cosmos series by Carl Sagan, and then, of course, redone by Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is just parroting what Sagan said, just reestablishing it as the standard of science, where, and basically it's for misinformation, tier two science for the public, but also to give other scientists that work for the government or government programs a outline of what they can talk about and what they cannot talk about. So those are the allowed topics, so to speak. So at any rate, if you can also see the online or in my education package, the discussion about how Joe Burns, the editor of Icarus Magazine, which is the Cornell Space Science Journal, stole my idea, literally lock, stock, and barrel terminology, everything, because I had submitted my article to Icarus to be published. He wrote back a letter saying, no, there's no reason to believe this, and then stole it and published it himself. What a, you know, just very typical of the thieves at NASA. And then was very, and then worked very diligently along with Carl Sagan to have me removed. Yeah, that's what you get. That's standard science, buddy. You get the clowns and the, you know, the charlatans who don't have any good ideas, stealing ideas, and then trying to cover their tracks. Anyway, but back to the idea of spokes. Now, when I talked about the rings, the Saturn rings, and how the sweeper moons would sweep out the area as they were discharging the local capacitor. And, of course, that's what's going on. So what I'm going to do now is educate you as to exactly why the spokes in Saturn's rings are occurring and how they're occurring. What's going on here? So what happens, just to give you a visual, if you can go online and look at the videos of these, there's many videos that are taken over a period of time, photographs put together and then put in as a video. And so what happens is, imagine the Saturn's rings. And by the way, the rings, one, it looks like they are like a record disc, and they literally are. They spiral in very slowly. So these rings are renewing on a constant basis. And so it's a process, but I'm not going to go into the how the rings form, but just the fact that there are very thin rings, and it's mainly dust and water. That's what the rings of Saturn are comprised of, is very, very fine dust grains and then water. And so it's like little icicles, little microscopic pieces of ice, and they reflect the sunlight and then become visible. So at any rate, by the way, the sunlight out at this region of the solar system is almost minuscule. If you looked at the sun from Saturn, it would look like almost like a regular other star in the sky. It would be very small, not contributing much energy at all. And okay, so getting back to what causes the spokes. And so once again, if you looked, just imagine Saturn, and I believe you all know what the Saturn rings look like. It's like a record disc that's around Saturn, and it has gaps in the rings. And so there are regions, the circular regions, where there's simply nothing. And those are the regions where the sweeper moons are, and that's what I predicted. And of course, prior to that, nobody really understood this, that there was something in those gaps that was sweeping it out, because gravitationally, things that are that small really don't have any effect. There's just not enough gravitational force And here's the thing, from telescopes at the time that we had at Earth in 1979, you could see possibly up to something that was, or down to the size of maybe 200 miles across, and anything smaller than that you would not have been able to see with these Earth-based telescopes. And of course, that was before the Hubble Space Telescope also. And so the idea is that anything smaller than 200 miles across would simply not have enough gravitational field to affect things thousands of miles away out in this ring system. So nobody ever dreamt of it. And of course, they all repeated like sing-song nursery rhyme, the standard story that the rings were formed 4.5 billion years ago, in the formation of the solar system, and that was a permanent fixture of Saturn ever since, which is nonsense. I mean, it was just, there would be 100 reasons for not believing that story. And they thought, well, maybe it was a moon that tried to form and didn't, and this was the remnant pieces of that moon that did not form. And in fact, that's what Joe Burns, the thief Joe Burns, when he wrote me a letter stating that there was no reason to believe there were moons in the rings of Saturn, the idea that he literally stole from me after they were proven to be true, by the way, he became the NASA sweeper moon expert at Saturn. What a clown. Anyway, the what he wrote back to me, rejecting my paper, which then I resent to a European journal at the behest of a guy named Hans Bethe, Nobel Prize winner that was resident at Cornell, who I talked to quite a bit when I was there. And he said, I told him, I said, Hans, my papers are not getting published in the American journals. And he said, here. Said, I'll show you where to go. You know, I don't know if he made a call or not. I really don't know. But anyway, my papers started to be published in the European journals, and which were international journals. In fact, they were bigger journals than the U.S. journals. The Icarus Journal of Cornell was at best, a minor journal on the list of. And so my papers were being published in things like Astrophysics and Space Science and Moon and the Planets, which were much bigger international journals. But at any rate, Joe Burns wrote back and said, the belief is that, not the belief, he said, made a blanket statement that the rings of Saturn were left over from the formation of the solar system 4.5 billion years ago, and there was no need to assume or project, hypothesize that there might be moons in them. And of course, when the Pioneer and the Voyager spacecraft went by, they discovered the moons exactly as I stated they would be in these gaps in the rings. And so at any rate, putting that together, but then see, by this time I had already understood, and you can read about this, by the way, in my other books. I talk about this, the weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, and the Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book. I talk about this situation at Saturn. But by this time, I knew that Saturn and Jupiter were small stars with fusion in their atmospheres. And here's the deal with fusion. The idea that fusion is something in the core of the sun is completely bogus. It doesn't make sense at all. It doesn't explain the surface features of the sun. It doesn't explain the solar wind. It doesn't explain solar flaring. The idea that the heat sources at the center of the sun had been worked out previously, and the emanation of the heat in the form of X-rays and other light coming out from the core of the sun would make the surface of the sun perfectly smooth with no activity at all and just like a heat ball. And the reason is because it's called the random walk problem. And what happens is if you had fusion, the way they're talking about, caused by high pressure at the center of the sun, then the resulting energy would soon become an X-ray, a series of X-rays. And what would happen is they would go just a very short distance in terms of atomic nuclei and be absorbed. Then it would be retransmitted and absorbed, etc. And by the time this energy worked its way out to the surface, it would be perfectly uniform. Even if there were locations of abnormally high fusion or concentrations of heat in the core, by the time this emanated all the way out to the surface, it would be perfectly smooth, with no characteristics at all, with no granularity, with no solar wind, with no excess current of protons coming off of this, with no explosions of any kind, none of the surface features you see, much less the tornadoes that are seen on the sun, which the Russian, that's why one of the things the Russian scientists were very interested in my work is because they were seeing tornadoes on the sun. They discovered them back in the 1990s, 10 years before NASA did. And the explanation for these was based on my work. So that was one of the reasons. Also, Tunguska, the Tunguska event in Russia was an electrical discharge. It was not a asteroid of any kind coming into Earth's atmosphere. It was an electrical discharge from a comet that passed by, just a small comet, but snapped an electrical discharge into that region of Tunguska and caused that massive explosion that basically blew the trees down for 50 miles around. But at any rate, back to the sun, what I realized was that Saturn and Jupiter had ongoing fusion because they had all the characteristics. They had excess heat, much more heat than they would receive from the sun. And literally, when the Voyager 1 spacecraft went by Jupiter, it literally detected the proton wind coming up off the surface of Jupiter. Actually was reported in Science, the NASA article in Science Journal, and but that was the last time they ever talked about any of that. They were just like prevented from talking about anything that supported my work. But my paper predicted that Saturn and Jupiter would be small stars with ongoing fusion in the atmosphere. Okay, so let's get back to Saturn. So what's going on at Saturn is it has a proton wind, just like the sun, which sets up a capacitor. So the ring moons, the moons that fill these, they're larger than average objects that are in the rings of Saturn, and they have now been observed in the rings. And so the reason that I noted these with prior observations prior to the Voyager spacecraft getting to Saturn was that the way the rings were fading. Now, if you imagine the gaps in the rings, the inside part of the rings where the gap, okay, there's the rings where you see the visible rings, and then there's a gap. That's where the moons are. The inside edge of the rings were fading gradually, yet the outside edge of the rings were very sharply defined. And this fits perfectly with the plasma discharge comet model, which shows that it's basically like a comet tail. It's like literally this moon that's in the rings is discharging the capacitor, the fusion base capacitor, and is acting like a comet. And so it's drawing material in from away from Saturn, from the rings, and that's the spokes. Those are the spokes. It's literally drawing material in and making this moon larger. And then the nose side, in other words, the Saturn side of this ring, is very sharply defined, as the same as with a comet. And I show these, for example, the circle of equal force is one of the things I calculate in my papers. It's the three-part comet paper at the end. It's republished in my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. And so what happens is the nose side, in other words, the Saturn side of the comet, is sharply defined. And the tail side of the comet extends out very far. And that explains why the ring fading is the fading of the rings, and then also the rings, the spokes in the rings. So the spokes are actually where the comet flares up and draws material out of the rings very quickly, causing the spokes. The spokes are simply a darkening of, or a lack of material in the rings. And then also when I was making the prediction prior to the discovery of the moons, there was one ring that had an uneven fading. So I predicted that the moon would not lie in the plane, its orbit would not lie in the plane of the rings. And that's exactly how they found it. And that's explained also because the fading of the rings was only in one small part on opposite sides of Saturn. So that meant that this moon was going through an orbit that was not in the plane of the rings. And it only crossed the ring plane in two places. So that made sense. So all of this I was able to predict from observations that had made prior, that had been made prior to the Pioneer and Voyager spacecraft getting to Saturn and actually observing the sweeper moons. And so at that point, when the Pioneer and Voyager spacecraft got to Saturn, all of the ring moons had been discovered exactly as I predicted. And it could not be gravitational, and I talk about this in the Saturn Sweeper Moon paper, that if it were gravitational, there could be a similar effect, but that would make these ring particles the density of neutron stars. In other words, extremely dense. And there were other factors that said, no, that is not correct. There would be other telltale signs if it were due to mass. So it was not due to mass. It was not due to very massive objects. It was due to the electrical effects. And so and that's also an indicator that the spokes are intermittent. If it were due to gravity, the spokes would not be intermittent. It's only due to the electrical discharging that is intermittent that causes the spokes, which are intermittent. And also they have learned that these things are seasonal, that Saturn has an 18-year period going around the sun, and the spokes occur during one of these 9-year cycles. And so that's very similar to Earth, where Earth is on its axis, and we go around the sun in a 1-year cycle. And that's, for example, why we get the seasonal auroras on the north pole of Earth. There's an actual season based on whether the north pole is pointed towards the sun or away from the sun, and the same with the south pole, whether it's pointed towards or away from the sun. We get what is called a ring current. And so the same is true on Saturn, the same situation on Saturn, where it has a tilted axis relative to the sun, and so it has seasons, but it's based on an 18-year orbit instead of a 1-year orbit as with Earth. Jupiter's axis is perfectly aligned with the sun, which means that Jupiter was the original twin star of the sun. So people talk about twin stars or another star associated with our sun. Jupiter is that object. Oh, so anyway, back to the spokes of Saturn. They're now being touted as a great mystery. No, there's no mystery. The only mystery is how stupid can NASA be? Because the answer is right there. But see, they can't talk about this because it would lead to me being correct about the comets, and then their whole story narrative about dirty snowball comets would go away, which is just bogus. every scientist in the world who's worth their salt knows, including the European Space Agency, but they can't talk about it because then they wouldn't get more money from NASA. Because the European Space Agency really spends a trickle of money on their programs. If it weren't for NASA, they would really not be much at all. So they have to kowtow to NASA, and the Russians don't. The Russians don't believe that at all. The Russians have been teaching my science for a long time. But anyway, the CIA, who owns NASA, basically operates NASA, has operated completely, had complete control of NASA since before 1991, but it really was solidified in 1991. And if you want more information on that, read my second to most recent book, Planet X Update 2020, The Real History of Planet X. It goes into all of the detail on that. So anyway, now you have a much better idea about what causes the spokes at Saturn than anybody at NASA. And I just can't believe that these scientists are that stupid. That, I mean, can it be? And I think they are. They're tier two scientists. They're textbook repeaters. They've got a PhD. And they're chosen because they're stupid. That's all I can tell you. This is a topic, the spokes at Saturn, and the cause of them has been resolved for, you know, like I say, since 1979, literally, and they just refuse to look at it. It's like the elephant in a room that everybody refuses to see. So, okay, just a quick mention here about the earthquake in Turkey. There's about a lot of misinformation going around that it was somehow caused by HARP. Turkey sits on an earthquake zone, and they are prone to large earthquakes like this. The last one, I think, was in 1999. And then people were saying, oh, because they saw lights around the earthquake, atmospheric lights, etc., that proved that earthquake was caused by HARP. No. Earthquakes generally have lightning associated with them, atmospheric lightning. And when I was in a major earthquake in Ecuador a number of years ago, yes, there was atmospheric lightning all over the place. And that's part and parcel to an earthquake. The earth is very electrical. Just remind you also, my new book, The Real History of Man and Earth, Myth, Magic, and Mayhem, is now on Amazon. So you can buy it there for $13.95. And yes, it is for sale on Amazon, and most of my books will be there pretty soon in a print-on-demand format. And also visit my webpage, jmccsci.com and jmccwaterfilters.com. I'm out of time. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.